You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
Honey, I don't know what to do. I just went to the fridge and... Oh, please ready yourself. We're out of beer.
Well, that's no problem, honey. I was just listening to oneofus.net and they said on there that, apparently there's this company, Oscar Blues Brewing, that makes all kinds of great beers. They were the first people to put craft brew in a can.
What, you mean like all those other beers that are now? Those craft beers that they put in a can that I see everywhere? They couldn't have done it first.
They did with Dale's Pale Ale. It's so delicious. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's a brewery of theirs right down the street from us.
Really?
Well, yeah, we live in Austin, right near oneofus.net. I mean, we love them. That's why we're subscribers as well. It's the only way they can keep going. That and, well, Oscar Blues Brewing Company, which is their sponsor.
Wow, I feel so much better.
Waterboarding, watching WWE pay-per-views. Waterboarding, watching WWE pay-per-views.
That is a complicated question. How many towels are on my face?
So we're going to go with waterboarding?
We're going to go with waterboarding. Hi, I'm Richard.
I'm Gene.
And you are listening to... Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, thank you as always for tuning in to oneofus.net's dedicated pro wrestling podcast. We always appreciate it. Don't forget, you can become a member of oneofus.net. It's really simple. We really appreciate our subscribers. You get access to all kinds of incredible exclusives, including things like movie commentary tracks, additional podcasts that aren't available anywhere else. But, you know, what it really does is it keeps shows like this on the air. We will be free till the end of time, until we stop recording this, or until, you know, Vince comes around and, you know, sets Kevin Dunn on us, or whatever the final our final fate is. That, you know, that's what we'll... That, you know, we are here, and we are free, and we always will be. But subscribers help us keep the lights on, help us do the podcast. You can also buy films through us if you go to Digital Noise, which is our weekly podcast on home release movies. You can buy movies straight through there. You go to if you go to Amazon from there, we get a little kickback from every disc sold. And here's the great thing. It doesn't even have to be from those items. As long as you go and you buy something on that trip, we get a portion of it. So we've literally had somebody who went through Digital Noise, through those links, and bought a fridge. Wow. And we got Amazon said, well, thank you, because they bought the fridge. Here's some money, which was pretty spectacular.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, there's so many ways to support us. But, yeah, and one of the best ways is just if you like any of our podcasts, not just us, but any of them at all, tell your friends about them, tell your colleagues about them, tell other people about them. You know, the more listeners, the happier we are, and we really, really appreciate you tuning in yet again. So, on to where we are. And last weekend was... It's funny. There have been people who have said that Extreme Rules 2018 is the worst WWE pay-per-view of all time. I cannot stand by that. I think that is hyperbole. I think it is one of the worst WWE pay-per-views in a very long time, and it is late-era WCW bad. And I think the booking is the closest they have ever come to Vince Russo era TNA.
Agreed.
Pay-per-view booking. I have no idea who this show was supposed to get over. The fact that it happened the same weekend that everybody's just reeling from Daniel Cormier getting the UFC belt. Oh, and there's Brock Lesnar. And people are saying, well, oh, yeah, this I'm going to... Normally it's you that goes straight into the tirade. I'm sorry. I don't care what anybody says. If you honestly believe that Brock Lesnar turning up at UFC rather than turning up at WWE helps WWE, then you're the kind of person that thinks that Medusa turning up on WCW and dropping the WWF women's belt in the trash helped the WWF. Are you insane?
Or are you the type of person that think Carmella's a great worker and Asuka sucks? Oh. I'm going to get back to that one. Back pocket that one.
But I will say in advance, the only good thing about that angle is that James Ellsworth is not under contract with the WWE. So he goes away eventually.
Yes.
And I don't care what anybody says. Everybody's like, oh, well, you know, I don't care about the comedy. I don't care whether you think this is good. This guy does not belong in the WWE in any working capacity. Everything he did last weekend, I looked at and went, you make the slightest mistake, you are going to really seriously hurt yourself. The guy's an indie jobber, and that's it, and he needs to go away. And I know guys on the indies who are his size, 10 times the worker, and could actually go out there and do something, and they're left while he, because Vince thinks that guys with no chins are funny, continues to have a job. That's it.
Yeah, I find Ellsworth harmless. He's not the part of the package that annoys me. His greener than frog shit partner.
We're gonna get to that. We'll get to that. But yeah, Extreme Rules 2018, which from moment one, it was troubled by the fact that they sabotaged the announced main event. Which was supposed to be a six-man...
It was a six-way for the number one contendership. That changed, and to become
a match we'd already seen on Raw.
Well, I heard that day, the original main event was supposed to be Roman Lashley, which, I wouldn't have minded since the outcome happened the way it did, but it got tinkered with, and eventually we got an Iron Man match. An Iron Man match today with this WWE crowd after 3.5 hours sitting there, you decide to put an Iron Man match on last.
Yeah.
And wonder why the crowd hijacked the show.
I feel sorry for those guys, because they put on a pretty decent match. It wasn't great. The pacing was weird. It was a totally screwy finish. Whoever booked Drew McIntyre, whoever booked the match, there were points where you're just like, well, why is Drew doing any of this? And when he's doing some of the things he's doing, it's not helping Dolph, and Dolph could have actually just won on the tie. It's established that on an Iron Man match, a tie means that the champion stays the champion. This is old news. And suddenly, they come in, and here's where the logic falls down. They come back when they're tied. Kurt Angle says, I'm restarting the match. He says, I'm restarting the match. So Drew McIntyre is still banned from ringside. This is not a different match. He's still under the ban. So why does Drew McIntyre get to come back do a screwy finish so that you just go, well, what was that?
Well, none of this made any sense. We're going to come full circle back to this. Let's start the saga from the beginning. I normally don't go in depth with the pre-show matches, but I'm going to this time for the simple fact. Okay, Andrade Cien Almas versus Sin Cara. They've been wanting to do this match forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And we got a halfway decent match on SmackDown. That should have been, okay, on to bigger and better things. But no. No, 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 no. You have this match again on pay-per-view and have it be worse.
Yeah.
Have it be worse. So you not only made, Sin Cara look bad, but you now make... you know what? I knew this was going to... I said it weeks before. almost got called up. Like, they're going to put him in a bunch of nothing feuds with jobbers, and he's going to just seem like just another guy within about 2 months.
I was right. Yeah.
I was right.
He's just some dude. It's weird. Like, everybody was going like, well, I hope they send him to the main roster and don't stick him on 205 Live. 205 Live's booking is better at the moment. Let's be honest. They're actually...
Triple H saved that show.
They are differentiating between the wrestlers. They're putting on cruiserweight matches. They're not putting on kind of WCW-style cruiserweight matches where everybody got hurt and 20 years later none of those guys can walk. But, you know, they're
still really damn good matches.
Yeah.
Then we have New Day versus Sanity, and the questionable booking continues. Sanity debuted not too long ago. Remember how they lost in their opening match? Like, this was Lucha Underground?
Yeah. Just absurd. Absurd.
Why would you call someone up and have them lose a name?
Because you're WWE and you've got no clue how this works.
Okay.
This is painfully bad. Do you remember, like, a couple of weeks ago, and we didn't talk about WWE at all? Oh, this podcast was so happy and light and breezy.
Now that we're talking about WWE,
fuck this company.
Look how fucking close to an aneurysm both of us are.
Just unbelievable.
But they defeated the New Day in a tables match. It wasn't a bad match, but it was a TV match.
Yeah,
it was a TV match.
Not a pay per view match. This was not an extreme. This was weirdly like. Out of the handful of actual Extreme Rules matches, this was, you know, you look at it and go, okay, fair enough, but nothing I haven't seen on a Tuesday night.
Exactly.
Nothing. This was a solid, this was two really good three-man teams. This was a solid trios match. There was nothing wrong with it. But you could have put this on any pay-per-view. It makes you wonder why this was called Extreme Rules at all.
And then then we get to the opening match of the main card.
Hey, one of the best matches of the night, which isn't saying much.
I don't,
but it was one of the best matches of the night.
I don't know if I can agree. There was literally no heat segments. There was literally...
What was better? I'm not saying it was good, but I'm saying what was better? How many...
AJ Rusev was better.
That's why I said one of. Like, this is definitely in the upper half of the card. And this was a nothing match where the B team is barely over more. I mean, the two people who they've completely wasted for years.
Against Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt for the tag team championship.
And it's like, well...
Okay, of the world.
Okay, this is fair enough. There was the fact that there is nothing wrong with this match, and that makes it one of the better matches.
Well, no, I disagree in that there's plenty wrong with this match in the outcome. This is Jinder Mahal all over again. You have someone that literally has two wins within the last 24 months. You all of a sudden push them and give them the tag team championship.
Oh, that's what I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm saying the match itself was okay. The booking. Top to bottom on this show was abysmal. None of it made any sense. Most of it was actively insulting. Speaking of actively insulting, although stupid angle where actually, guess what? The only result that made any sense.
Are we talking about getting over Vince's fetish with tall guys again?
Yeah.
The big guy fetish, like Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin.
Okay, I'm gonna tell this story again. I think I've told this on air before, but I'm gonna tell it again. A few years ago, there was an NXT house show in Austin, and the main event was Baron Corbin versus Finn Balor, and it was spectacularly bad. Not because of Finn Balor, but because Baron Corbin came out, and everybody was like, who are you? We don't care. You're bad. Please put a shirt on. Because by this point, you know, it was sad tummy.
Sad.
Fat tummy Baron Corbin. He couldn't work. He was just nothingy. He was like barely...
But he's tall.
He was barely competent.
Tall, so he's going to get a push.
Oh, it got worse. Finn gives him a DDT. Baron Corbin...
Oh, the... biggest botch?
Botch is taking AD. He kind of falls to his knees and then kind of leans forward. And you could just see Finn Balor just so you're like, what? How are you so bad at this? And he delivered the stiffest missile dropkick I think I've ever seen. Because if you know what you're doing, a missile dropkick is a great thing. If you really just run very, very hard at somebody and hit them way above their center of gravity, they're going to go flying backwards. And that is exactly what he did to Baron Corbin. And he sent him reeling into the barricades. And you could tell that Corbin was just like... Man, I'm not supposed to be doing this. This is a terrible, terrible idea. What was I thinking? And he got his ass handed. He got a shoot missile dropkick, and then Baylor just beat him for the next 2 minutes and just was like, "This is stupid. You shouldn't be here." And for them to be rerunning a failed NXT house show feud.
Not only that,
on the main roster. It's
the commentary at this point. This was the match where it really started to make me want to punch my fist right through the television.
Shut up, Byron.
No, I'm at the point of shut up, Corey Graves. Like he was so infuriating. I defend the crap out of Corey Graves, and he was just so obnoxious tonight. Like, really, with big guy will always beat a small guy, and there should be weight divisions there are weight divisions in sports for a reason. Then why the hell is Finn Balor not on 205 Live?
Yeah,
don't bring that up unless you want to get called out for the stupidity of your storylines.
Well, I think that would be less infuriating if. Here's why that doesn't work now. And it's very simple. It's because they have so screwed up everything else about commentary that now we go, well, Corey Graves is the voice of reason on this show. So when he says something that is what a heel commentator should say, like, that's Gorilla Monsoon. You know, Gorilla would have said something. Because you go back and listen to a lot of kind of classic 80s, early 90s commentary when they weren't just burying the product, but you had those guys, and it's clear this is who Corey is listening to, is going, you make the heel sound great, and you make the face sound like a dweeb, so when the face comes back, you have egg on your face. You sound like a numbskull. So, but the problem is, everybody else on the commentary desk sucks so badly that when Corey Graves says something dumb but heelish, then he's the one person you're supposed to say, you make sense. And so you feel betrayed because the one last bastion of hope has crumbled.
Michael Cole sucks. Coach sucks.
Michael Cole doesn't care anymore. Michael Cole is, like, now that he at times has been a really, really good heel commentator.
Saxton and Phillips never got the chance to prove they were good because they came up in this crap system. So maybe they are good. Maybe if they didn't have Vince or Dunn in their headsets, maybe they would be able to be good. Well, actually, I take that back. Phillips wasn't half bad in NXT.
Yeah,
he really wasn't. It's this system that takes decent commentators and turns them to crap.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel sorry for them both because, you know, they're... Well, no, I think Byron Saxton always would have sucked. And Jonathan Coachman has no excuse.
Much sports experience, you would think he'd be better.
But he's not.
But here we go. This is
okay. Just,
all right,
these mics are new. Don't blow them out. Yeah, we have new mics tonight, so if the show sounds a little better, that's why.
We have Asuka versus Carmella for the Women's Championship of SmackDown with James Ellsworth in a shark tank hanging above the ring. Let me count the ways in how this match went wrong. Firstly, 35 seconds into the match, the ref is distracted, and Ellsworth throws a gimmick out of the cage. No build-up, no nothing. Just immediately throws out the cage. The cage is only hanging, what, 7 or barely 8 feet in the air? So he somehow picks the lock and gets his foot caught and is hanging upside down, flak jacket on, or some sort of vest. Like, wow, okay, let's prove how fake this sport is. Asuka being made to look like a numbskull for getting distracted over and over, and Carmella ramming her head into his shark cage.
Oh, after, you know, 5 minutes of Asuka just kicking James Ellsworth, and I'm like, if his ankle goes the wrong way from how they've got him suspended, he is going to break that really badly. And if whatever it is they've got holding him up goes, he is just going to land either on the top of his head.
Or if he had a chin, that would
have... Or on his neck. This, nothing, like, everything that... Your options are either your stupid booking comes to fruition and we all get annoyed at you because your booking is dumb, or James Ellsworth breaks his neck in the ring. What do you think is the... What is the upside of this?
Well, there's more. I have no problem with casual fans. At one point, casual fans made the world go round as far as professional wrestling was concerned. But when I have people telling me that Asuka sucks and that Carmella is a great worker, it makes me want to take a baseball bat and beat your fucking brains to the point where there's nothing left but liquid.
Yeah.
So please don't ever again say that Asuka sucks and Carmella is a great worker. If you like Carmella on the microphone, fine. If you think Asuka's not been good on the main roster, fine. But these people like Carmella, Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, they are greener than frog shit. Don't try to tell me they're great workers. Sorry.
No,
I did my best to stay calm and not blow these mics out.
You did very well. It is absurd that you've got people who try to claim that she's a great worker. You've got people who try to claim she's a great promo. I'm like,
Carmella's halfway decent promo. Halfway decent.
I mean, this is
But how is she a great worker? Can the people listening get back at me? Tell me, how is Carmella a great worker? Or are you just saying that because you think you know pro wrestling and don't?
I think it's because I hate to blame him, but I am. You had all these people who would say, "Oh, the Miz is a great worker," and they were saying this in like 2005. I was like, "No, you've just seen him a lot. He's not a great worker. He's a terrible worker. You don't know what a great worker is. He's annoying." I mean,
it makes me think the WWE audience doesn't know what a great worker is.
Well, and what really bugs me at the moment is you've got people saying, well, you know, oh, he's good eventually. He's good now. It's like, yeah, after 20 years of doing this, which is what it feels like, hey, you should be good. And more importantly, people saying, well, Alexa Bliss is the new Miz. Alexa Bliss, A, she's not great, but she actually can work, understands how a match should flow. Like, you know, I don't like most of what she's done on the main roster, but she understands what the flow is.
Her mic work does not bother me at all.
Her entrance, you know, she's a really good...
She comes off like a star.
Yeah, she comes off, she gets what the gimmick is.
I think it's just after a year, even the crowd is starting to see through, the cracks are starting to show where... Okay, well, she's also not really that good. And
she's not really that good, but they've done everything they can to keep decent opposition away from her. And they're playing, you know, the problem was they bought Ronda in at the wrong time, because if they bought Ronda in...
If they brought Ronda in on SmackDown instead of Raw...
Well, no, I don't think it matters, because Ronda has to get the belt at a big event.
Yeah.
So, honestly, it has to either be WrestleMania or SummerSlam, and to do that, they've had to kind of put her in a holding position. And I think they probably, what they should have done was held off, debuted her at SummerSlam, not bring her in so early, but they wanted to get that first WrestleMania match. And the gap between WrestleMania and SummerSlam is too long. I think what they could have done is bring her in at SummerSlam, have that same match then. And then kind of, people are more forgiving because then it's all road to WrestleMania. Now we're just going, well, when are they going to put the belt on her? They're not going to put it on her in a minor event. They've had to put her in a holding pattern. And you could put her, what they could have done is put her in all the way through where she has to work her way through the ranks because everybody's working their way through the ranks. You could have had her basically doing what they did with Jay Lethal on Ring of Honor recently, which is Jay has to prove, it's not just that he has to work his way up to the rankings to get another shot. It's that he has to prove to himself that he can beat anybody. So he has to go back and beat everybody that he lost to. Whereas Ronda has to go, I have to beat everybody to get to the front of the queue because that's what I do. I don't queue jump. And you make that a character beat. Whereas instead what they've done is, well, she keeps getting outwitted. So immediately you've made your top baby face yet again look like a schmuck. By the way, I am going to say this because I say this about every single wrestler. I know I go on about this, but for the love of God, Ronda, get some knee pads. You want to be Roddy Piper, you want that influence, just remember, Roddy's legs were screwed. They were in really, really bad shape, and you could see, he was having real trouble walking, real trouble doing anything. Don't be that guy, Ronda. Like, get some knee pads, please. I'm just asking. Also, Kelly Klein, please get some knee pads because you worry me every time you get in the ring.
Okay, here we go. That match didn't make me flip out as much as it did watching it, but I was able to keep my cool. Here we go. Nakamura, Jeff Hardy, United States Championship.
You know
what the hell happened with this quote match?
Well, unquote. I think what happened.
It wasn't the TNA special.
I think what happened was that Shinsuke went, you know what? When I go back to Kyoto, I'm going to have made a bucket load of money for doing nothing. This is kind of great. I'm okay with this. The fact that you've taken Shinsuke Nakamura and his gimmick now is kicking guys in the nuts, and that's it, and then you put him in a match with Jeff Hardy, which everybody's looking at you, oh, this is dream booking. And then you make that match not really about Shinsuke and Jeff, but about Jeff and Randy Orton. Why is this anything?
Is Randy a heel? Is he a babyface?
Who cares?
Who cares?
Randy is fundamentally the least interesting guy on the roster at this point. They've done nothing. I've never been a Randy Orton fan. I know everybody's like, you get the old times where like, oh, he works so clean. And I'm like, I don't care. He's fundamentally boring in the ring. He is
haven't enjoyed a Randy Orton match in, wow.
To put him in the TNA context, he is late era Matt Morgan when they didn't know what to do with him, and every angle with him was dull and stupid. That's who he is. He's Matt Morgan. There's no sensible booking.
Yeah.
He's not got a character anymore. He just comes in and wants...
When he wants to work, you get a decent match and decent storyline. When he wants to work is the key.
And he's clearly a part-timer now. Let's be honest. He has never recovered from being chased down the ring of WrestleMania by that giant sperm. That did it. That killed him. He's never come back from that.
Bray Wyatt match?
I don't think he cares. Yeah. I don't think he cares. I think, he is the epitome of the guy who's going to come in, work a few months a year, make a lot of money, sell a few shirts. He doesn't care. He's got to still be on one of the biggest contracts because that's what they do. They pay guys who've been there forever a huge amount of money, and who cares? Who cares? And then they're going to bring somebody like Aleister Black up and have no clue what to do with him. And a guy who was like, you know what? I could sell 10,000 Aleister Black shirts at WrestleMania without raising a sweat. Not a problem. Just put a decent design on them whereas he, you still got Randy.
Don't have him show up on the main roster. That's how you get 10,000 shirts.
Yeah, and instead, what are we getting? Randy Orton, the walking epitome of a knockoff Affliction shirt. Like, this, I don't care. Nobody can care about this. And you're wasting Shinsuke. You're damaging his stock. He's got a few more main event matches in him.
And
they've done nothing.
This is how you want Nakamura to win a major title?
I don't think he cares. I really don't think he cares at this point. I think he's literally just going like, I turn up, I get to do my intro, and I make a ton of money. I get a pop from the intro. All I have to do is kick somebody in the nuts. It's amazing that they wasted him versus AJ. And that feud is clearly over now, for no good reason. Just, I don't know what any of this is about.
Should we get to this next head-scratcher of a match? Kevin Owens versus Braun Strowman.
The whole
context of the feud was that Owens kept running away. Owens kept running away. Every time Strowman tried to confront him, Owens ran. If I was booking this show, I would put him in a match where you can't run, like a lumberjack match. Or the ring is surrounded.
Or Hell in a Cell.
With a roof.
Yeah. Why have you got a cage match when
one of the objectives is to run?
Yeah. Unbelievable. I don't know what they were thinking.
Who is the idiot? Whoever booked this match in particular that decided to put it in a cage with no roof where you can run is an idiot.
And then it's booked so that the reason Kevin Steen loses is because... I mean, they're both idiots. Kevin Steen loses because he decides to get back in the ring when he's actually at a point where he could just get the hell out of there. And then Braun Strowman... Braun's looking at you. Let's imagine I'm Braun Strowman, and you are Kevin Owens. I have you up in a chokeslam position on top of the ring. I have two options. I can chokeslam you into the ring, which is going to hurt an awful lot, and then I can climb down and win. Or I can chokeslam you onto the announcer's table, which is going to hurt an awful lot, and then you win. Braun Strowman is a moron. That is the dumbest booking imaginable, because all you're doing is... Because it means he's going, that's going to look awesome when I do that. And I'm like, isn't Braun Strowman supposed to be the guy who's like, you know what, I can kill the guy and still win? It makes your baby face, and I'm guessing he's supposed to be the baby face now. It's very hard to tell. It makes him into a putz.
I don't disagree with anything you say. However, semicolon.
Yep.
When have wins and losses mattered on this show?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. This particularly reinforces the idea that wins and losses do not matter. That everything about this reinforces the wins and losses. This was the ultimate wins and losses don't matter, which was TNA booking around 2011. Wins and losses don't matter. They are learning everything wrong from TNA. Like, this is astounding. I've literally never seen a company that has looked at the worst example of their competition and gone, how do we be more like that?
Next match.
Dumb as hell.
In the how to get Daniel Bryan under. Not over. Let's get him under. This company is fantastic. They find a way to get Daniel Bryan less over. I didn't think it was possible. I didn't think it was humanly possible to make the crowd not care about Daniel Bryan match. It now happened.
Well, it's because they have always booked him in the same way. And I don't care what Envy says. I know it's very hard to look back on Envy's career and say, well, you know, their one period in a company is responsible for them having this injury or that. Unless it's something really obvious, like, you know, Shawn Michaels in the casket match. You can't really say that. But they spent years having Daniel Bryan get just tossed around and ragdolled. I'm like, Your booking is hurting this guy. And the idea that you don't see that. So what do? He comes back. They put him in a feud with two guys whose gimmick is tossing everyone around like ragdolls. And, you know, I love the Bludgeon Brothers. You know, I have been huge fans of even the Vintner. For the longest time. And, you know, I've looked at them and gone, like, how on earth is Luke Harper not, you know, a major star in this company? Because they don't know how to book anyone.
Well, they take out Kane prior to the match.
Who then turns up with a legitimately broken foot. And then gets jobbed out in 20 seconds flat. He's like, he's a liability. Why is he here?
Did they not see WrestleMania and see the crowd's reaction when Shane had to fight by himself against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn? Does this company learn
this
anything?
This company learns nothing. This was a bad match that got one of the all-time greats under. Well done.
This was the equivalent of Stone Cold at WrestleMania in Houston where he turned heel.
Yeah.
Killed the crowd dead.
Unbelievable. I don't know how this company manages it.
But anyway, the Bludgeons are still tag team champions.
Yeah. The thing was that as soon as they announced that Kane is injured, and it was clear that they were going to win, so this match made zero sense. And in fact, haven't they already established that you can't hold the belts solo? So Daniel couldn't actually win? Like, no, this makes sense. This was ridiculous and annoying.
Next match, Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns. Bobby Lashley won. Next match.
Why? We haven't really talked about Blaster Lashley.
The fact that this company just completely killed him out of the gate with one of the stupidest storylines ever, and now we're supposed to buy him as a legit main event
guy? It's not even that. It's not even that. I remember Bobby Lashley's original WWE run. You want to know what I remember about it? I'll take a wild stab. No one cared. No one cared. No one cared. I'll say that again for those of you at the back who happened to crane in. No one cared. Bobby Lashley was a mid-card holding position. You could have put any one of 100 people in there, and he was the guy that finally killed ECW because they went, well, maybe they're going to have some common sense. Maybe they can book a few things. Mark Henry was, you know, he wasn't the perfect ECW champ, but at least he came in and he cared, and he really wanted to hold the brand up, and he came out and he did big tough guy matches, and I think it did an awful lot to, you know, I think his ECW run is really what previews
the Hall of Pain. Yeah.
Going down to ECW was the best thing that happened to Big Show in the mid 2000s. It really pecked him up. He was having great matches. He was going out there and he was fighting with people like Sabu, and you could tell he was enjoying himself.
Yeah.
He was having fun. You had the CM Punk run, which was great. You had so much down there that was wonderful. I mean, it was clearly troubled. It had a lot of issues. Matt Stryker. But
Vince McMahon.
But, if you know, there was always at least a little something where you could go, yeah, maybe I can watch this. Blaster Lashley was failing on the main roster. They tried to shotgun him up to
he got called up way too fast. I remember.
Well, he was never that good.
They were saying in developmental, we hope Vince doesn't see him. We hope they were hiding him.
Yeah,
they were hiding because they knew as soon as Vince saw him, oh, let's call this guy up immediately.
And he was mediocre in TNA. He was never one of their main. They put him in the main event. I don't know if I agree.
I think he proved himself the last 2 years that his last 2 years in TNA.
He was performing so rarely. The guy can come in and do a few good matches, but, you know, the idea that you're going to have him come out when people are tepid on him at best and most people don't remember. I mean, they showed a highlight reel and it was like, this guy was, he was in WWE. Yeah, I remember this. Most people do not remember Blaster Lashley was even there. Well, and they bring him in. It's kind of like when they bought Randy Orton in initially, and they brought him in with Cowboy Bob, and we were all supposed to think that Cowboy Bob was like one of the great performers of the 80s and 90s, and everybody was like, I literally don't know who this guy is. Most wrestling, and it's one of those moments where they are so caught up in their own history, they don't know that most people are just there going like, who? I don't remember.
Or
this.
They're so stupid that they think their audience doesn't remember, hey, this guy was pretty much a jobber.
Yeah. He was a jobber who killed ECW and had a very mediocre, who got, he was one of those people who got, when Vince went, let's be honest, post-Benoit, post-Eddie Guerrero, and with Rey Mysterio getting banged up so much of the time because of the kind of matches, yet again, big guy, small guy matches where he was getting banged up really badly and he was out for 6 months with a knee, he went, well, the US Championship has to hang on big guys. And he was one of the first big guys he saw, and they threw him in that. He was not ready for it, and I think he got a big ego, which is why he went to
Bellator.
He went to Bellator, where he had a very mediocre track record.
I don't know, 15-2 is not that bad.
It wasn't exactly like he was coming out. He wasn't even against particularly awesome people. I mean, people look at Bellator, and yeah, that 15-2, it's great on paper. But do people look at Bellator and go, oh, Bobby Lashley was up there with Krokop? No, they don't. So it's like, and if he'd have been as good as that track record suggests, and the matches have been as interesting, and anything about him had been as hot, then Bellator would have been in a much better position to compete with UFC. They never did, because they only really had Krokop. People were tuning in to see who Krokop beat up this week.
Yeah.
And Krokop can't have that many matches. So, like, you know, this guy nobody cares about. And you're putting him in the ring with
The 4 year project.
The ultimate main event jobber. Like, pretty literally, much. They have done nothing. They're just so dumb.
Roman is a walking paradox.
There's nothing to say about him.
He should be over.
He's not. He's not. It doesn't matter. There's nothing they can do with
him. They botched from day one of the Shield breaking up.
Well, he was never the most interesting guy. I've always said this. Roman was always defined by the guy who needed an assist on a powerbomb. That finisher was... It always made him look... Yeah, not weak, but not great. I don't know, it was supposed to be like, oh, they're a pack of jackals. But if they're a pack of jackals, then... None of them is... He never looked like a powerhouse. And they've tried to make him be a powerhouse ever since. It's never really...
Well, make him a powerhouse, but then have him selling like the baby face in peril for the majority of the match.
And also...
They can't make up their mind.
Name a memorable powerhouse moment for Roman Reigns. Like, we can all look back and there's like... the last guy they really sold is like, this guy is freakishly strong. Cesaro they tried, and at least there were some moments where you go, oh no, I remember that he did some stuff. But John Cena, having three guys on his back and AAing them, and people may say, well, the AA is not it's just a fireman's carry. But who cares? But when you've got three guys on your shoulder and he does squats with three guys on his shoulder and then AAs them. They're like, this guy is unspeakably strong. Roman Reigns is just, he can take a bunch of F5s. Well, that just means he gets really hurt. Like, this is a guy who's too stupid to lie down. And you put him in a match with a guy that nobody cares about because they killed all his heat. Well, killed whatever heat he had. And you're not sure, is like, he a face? Is he a heel? He's just some.
He is a paradox. Roman Reigns is a walking, talking, wrestling paradox. He should be over, but he's not. He should be a heel, but he's not. I don't hate Roman. I honestly think he has a decent look. He's not bad on the microphone when he's not parroting the idiot's.
I'm just going to have to quote
Scrubs. Those script writers.
I'm just going to have to quote Scrubs when this comes to Roman Reigns. I don't hate you. I nothing you. I don't care. I'm beyond the point of caring. And I think at this point for them, people to even say, oh, well, if we do X, Y, or Z, there's nothing you can do. Roman Reigns is done. You know, they're going to put the belt on him at some point. And
he's going to get booed.
And he's going to go into the Hall of Fame at some point. And he's going to have a nice, big, rich contract. He's going to sell T-shirts to 5-year-olds.
They should have turned him heel 2 years ago.
He's going to get people who are going to confuse him at the moment with Jason Momoa because they can't pay any attention. That's going to happen. And it doesn't matter. None of this is relative.
Shortly after WrestleMania 32.
Done.
When they were in Dallas, when he defeated Triple H, that should have been the beginning of when Seth was out with the injury, when he slowly started coming back and leaning towards going babyface. They should have had Roman slowly going to the dark side. So by mid-2016, there's your mega heel. Keep him heel for about a good year or so. Then by Royal Rumble this year, you could have turned him back and the crowd would have been behind him. But turning him heel would have been the obvious thing to do, right? You would think that this writing staff and the heads of creative would do something that made sense, right? Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. They're wrong.
Yeah, well, and then... I mean, we've already talked about the main event, which was just baffling.
Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax for the Women's Championship Extreme Rules match.
Which is a holding match because they decided to book Ronda, because I think they were like, well, we can't have Alexa and Ronda in like 3 months of them actually going toe-to-toe, so we've got to give...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. By the way, I did at one point think that Ronda got too enthusiastic and almost killed Mickie James. She swung her into the barricade so hard. Although, you know, kudos to Mickie James, because that woman can wrestle in heels, and that is quite an achievement.
Yes.
But yeah, I looked at that and went, that's not how
Mickie
you do
James heels. Is one of the all-time.
Oh, she is. I mean, if they were sensible, I mean, I know they're not going to do it, although they could actually have Mickie James screw Alexa, take the belt, so that you have to delay Ronda Alexa until WrestleMania.
So they keep going back and forth.
Well, and then you've got a few months of, like, you can have the three of them, like, and put Mickie James is a good promo. She's a great worker. I really want to see her with Ronda. I really want to see her. It'd be great to see her turn on Alexa.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I have a horrible suspicion what they're going to do is have her accidentally bonk into Alexa at SummerSlam or bonk into Ronda.
That's my question with this match. Extreme rules, right?
Yep.
Which means there are no rules, right?
Yeah.
Why did Natalya and Mickie James wait 5 minutes before getting involved
no
in
logic.
The match?
No logic at all. No logic at all. None of this worked.
Okay.
None of this made any sense.
Okay, and the match was pretty bad. I'm sorry. I know there's a metric ton of Alexa Bliss fans out there. She's not ready. Nia Jax fans out there. She wasn't ready. Both got called up way too soon.
Yeah.
And this is the type of match you get with two people that were called up way too soon. It's the blind leading the blind.
And now let's talk about what should have been the main event.
AJ Styles versus Rusev.
Yeah. I'm going to ask the one simple question here. Do you agree with the result?
If this were the last match of the night, yes. You want to send the fans home happy. If this were not the last...
Hang on. We discussed earlier what were the main event of the outcome of the main event was, and that didn't send anybody home happy. That sent everybody home confused and a bit annoyed.
Yeah.
So that's not a consideration here.
AJ wasn't going to go on last, then no. Rusev should have walked away with that championship.
Yeah.
Even though the build was really short.
I do wonder whether they're putting the belt on him at SummerSlam.
I think so.
This was only
part one of their saga.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first time Rusev has main evented a
in a one-on-one match,
and He looked...
He looked like a million bucks.
It felt like they were pacing it, so it did feel like they're going to come back for another one.
I think they would have paced it on Rusev. If they don't, they've completely missed the boat.
They managed to book it as a babyface versus babyface match. So somebody understands you've got to protect both of them as babyface.
Yes, both did feel protected.
Yeah, AJ looked great. The phenomenal forearm.
The storytelling throughout the match.
I swear, people who go, oh, the phenomenal forearm doesn't... let's just get going into it. Go look at that final phenomenal forearm. That was unbelievable.
He blasted him.
And Rusev just was in the perfect position for it. He rolled through
everything. Rusev is such a smart worker. I mean, we know AJ is probably... I would say he's behind just Omega and Okada as far as best worker on the planet.
Yeah.
Rusev does not get the credit for his ring generalship. How good he is. He's such a good storyteller. The minute things that ring positioning, all that stuff, knows how to work the hard cam. Even in the most crazy positions, in the middle of a brawl, in the middle of a submission, Rusev is the total package wrestler. You need to put the world title on him.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about something else. This is after last time when we were so happy, and now we're dealing with WWE. Other wrestling news.
G1, are you caught up?
I am not caught up on G1.
I'm not either.
Yeah, but it looks
a lot
like
of good matches.
It looks like they're heading to Kenny Omega versus Jay White. They have a lot of faith in Jay White.
Well, yeah,
I think rightly so.
That story was left unresolved after Jay won the U.S. belt because both of them moved on to other storylines a little too quick for my taste.
Yeah,
so they're going back to that.
I think they are actually going to. My suspicion is that they're going to make Kenny the first time Gaijin, 2-time G1 winner. I think that makes all the sense in the world. And then give it to Jay next year.
They could give it to Naito, and Naito actually go over at Wrestle Kingdom.
That is true.
I think would make a little more sense, because Naito not getting his big win at this point, if they don't do it next year.
Naito, I think, gets the big belt at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
I think there's no two ways around that. And then, of course, now with New Japan, they've finally done the... they've resolved the internal split in U.S. Bullet Club in not a way I expected.
And it was totally... at the G1 special in San Francisco.
Yeah, and they set up something really fascinating, which is...
Guerrillas of Destiny and King Haku formed their own faction.
Yeah, so you've basically got a split
and
between...
And Battle of Falle.
Battle of Falle. So you've basically got the Japanese Samoan Bullet Club versus... U.S. Canadian Bullet Club, which is really a really fascinating way to play it.
I loved it, and I loved the way it happened at the event. Basically, the whole story was we're tired of getting dragged into Kenny and Cody's bullshit.
Yeah,
and since you won't squash it, we'll squash it for you.
Yeah.
If we have to squash the entire Bullet Club to do it.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
it's
really
brilliant. Although to further the storyline, they've had to give us a bunch of fuck finishes at the G1, which I'm not used to this many weird finishes.
Well, I think that they'll get through that. But the interesting thing for me is that, I think people are going, well, what's New Japan going to do without Bullet Club if Bullet Club really splits up?
You've got enough factions.
New Japan does not
You've
need
Bullet
Club.
You've got Los Ingobernables. You have Suzuki-gun. You have factions.
You have Chaos.
Although, Chaos... The roster, as far as Chaos is concerned, is really just... I don't know if I want to say bloated. There's too many faces and heels all under the same umbrella.
I suspect Chaos is gonna kind of... That will split apart and it become two different factions, is my suspicion. But Suzuki Gun's huge as well. You've got so many of Suzuki Gun only work Japan occasionally...
How about Serious Toriano? How about this guy is actually... I'm not saying he's putting on amazing matches at the G1, But something, a switch flipped. This guy, I'm not used to this. I'm interested in seeing where this goes. Ghetto, when it comes to booking, when it comes to storylines, nothing happens that isn't called back to or furthered at some point. Yeah. So, like, except for the Tanahashi Suzuki destroying his fucking leg. I'm hoping that plays out throughout the majority of the matches later on.
I think that inevitably will. Oh, and speaking of people who are kind of having an unexpected, unless you were paying attention, NXT making such a deservedly big deal of Keith Lee. Hey, up, Keith.
Not only NXT is making all the right moves.
Oh, my God.
Keith Lee is going to get pushed to the moon because NXT, they're smart down there.
Keith Lee is a great promo. He is a phenomenal worker. You're bringing up, he's worked with
charisma.
Just about. Oh, he has charisma. Like, he is one of the most charismatic wrestlers they've ever had.
When it comes to charisma, he's the second coming of Adam Cole.
He is unbelievable.
Yes.
And if they are smart, I mean, he's ready to go right now. And also,
Io Shirai, isn't she coming in?
Yep, she's coming up very soon. She may be at the Performance Center.
Keep them in NXT. I want to see them make money. I want to see them with huge success. It's just the risk of main roster creative and booking.
They're not going to understand either of them.
I want Mustache Mountain and Undisputed Era to stay in NXT to give us these amazing tag matches. Did you see the one on TV week before last?
Yeah. Yeah, that was phenomenal. Well, and they're doing a nice feud between the two of them. The other really interesting thing was broadcast on TV last night. We knew about it for a while, was the Ring of Honor. Sadly, Dalton Castle out with horrible injuries. I mean, he's been working. I mean,
people don't realize how injured that he was while he was carrying that title.
Bulging disc in his spine. What else did he have? He had the bulging disc in his spine. I think he's actually got like a cracked vertebrae. He's got a fractured vertebrae.
Something over the shoulder.
His shoulder's jacked, and he's got a hamstring tear.
I give him all the respect in the world for working on.
I mean, it's
not the smartest thing, but when you're carrying a world championship.
Well, they didn't. I don't think they knew about the fracture in his spine June. It was either May or June.
So he needs to take time off.
And he, God bless him, he kept the belt on all through Pride Month. That was what he did. They took him off him at the beginning of July. So he...
I respect the
hell out of him. Understood what it meant
for him to carry the belt.
And never be explicit about it, but it was a big message. And I was like... Yeah, and then as soon as he could, it's like, I'm going, oh, my hurt.
That's respect to him. Yeah. That's respect to Ring of Honor for letting him carry it for despite the injuries.
As a man who has a boys peacock mask in his living room, get well soon, Dalton, because we want to see you back in that chase. My suspicion is they'll put the belt on him pretty soon. But yeah, he's
amazing.
Oh, he's astounding. He's unbelievably strong.
Great company a great champion to great champion and a company with questionable booking. I'm starting to fall behind on Lucha Underground because Sling TV pulled El Rey Network, so it's become harder and harder to watch, but I don't know. This is season 4 has been a bit of a chore to get through so far.
Yeah.
It feels like season 1 was outstanding. 2 was hit or miss. The first half of 3 was abysmal. When they went away for their break and came back during the Cueto Cup, the Cueto Cup saved season 3 of Lucha Underground. This season, I don't know what the hell is going on. They're trying to make Pentagon look like a beast with the belt. But in the process of doing so, he's making all the rest of the company look weak.
Yeah.
It's like what they're doing with Brock in WWE. We make Brock look like such a megastar that it makes everyone else look like jobbers. And I don't know. Penta, he's great, but damn, you have a roster full of people that also need the rub as
well.
Yeah,
and they're letting him down.
Yeah, and
I mean, at least they're getting, I mean,
and the commentary still,
I don't, at least we're going to get a decent and probably extremely violent match out of those guys soon, because we're going to have the
Penta
Callahan hair versus mask.
Oh, that's tonight, isn't it?
That is tonight.
Tonight's Impact Wrestling Slammiversary. The show's turned a corner. Honestly, Impact has been quite good. Unfortunately, no one knows that it's quite good.
Yeah.
It got
good a couple of years ago, basically when they stopped trying to be WCW and went, we need to be a really top-notch indie promotion with a TV deal. And that's
that has better production values than all the other indie promotions.
That's a huge deal, and it's a vital niche, and you've got a bunch of really good wrestlers who are finding somewhere. They're finding an outlet. You know, it's guys who are... At this point, it's pretty clear that WWE isn't interested in them. You know, the fact that, you know, for what, you know, and I know they were looking at the American Wolves a few years ago, and then they decided not to. But I hear rumors that James Storm there's a possibility he may actually finally go back to, you know, the door was left open. I think he should have gone to NXT when he did that run. He looked really good. There was a massive pop for him.
I think he just, it was comfortable staying in Orlando and not having to do any road stuff at all with TNA, so
it'll be interesting to see whether he ends up there. But yeah, I mean,
now that NXT is a touring brand,
yeah,
essentially.
Well, but now it's, you know, God, I still can't believe how bad Extreme Rules was. Like, it is, I was watching it and I was having trouble having it hold my attention. It's killed everybody. Nobody is interesting anymore. This was the epitome of...
It killed Dolph Ziggler again. And they just rehabbed him. Yeah. Him going to Raw. And even though I said at first it was a mistake putting him with Drew because it's going to hurt Drew. No, it helped Dolph.
Yeah.
Dolph is over once again. Him and Seth were having match of the week over and over until this show. Anyway,
the horror, the ongoing horror.
Shall we get the plugs, sir?
Yes, we should. Gene, where can we read your wonderful insights on many, many issues, not just this?
Well, covering pro wrestling at thescrumsports.com and also at oneofus.net. Also funding a handy dandy little Kickstarter for animated film I wrote. It's an adaptation of Peter Pan called The Land of Forever, so you might want to go ahead and check that out. Richard?
You can see my stuff at austinchronicle.com, where I am the screens editor. So I handle all the film reviews and what's happening in TV. We've got some big features coming up, which are going to be very, very exciting if you're a Rooster Teeth fan. We've got a big preview of their new film out of the studio, Bloodfest. It's coming up soon. And we're heading into festival season, which is, you know, already killing me. And you can also follow me on Twitter, at YorkshireTX.
And also me, at Gene Selassie.
And so, thank you yet again for tuning in. Like I said, we just appreciate that you listen, but if you can become a subscriber, we appreciate that even more. Spread the word about the show. And with that, ding ding.
Good night.